This morning, pastors from various churches are planning to protest against the closure of churches.
Well, back home, and with the majority of religious gatherings now cancelled, Melbourne's places of worship were empty today.
The governor is also banning indoor activities at houses of worship.
Religious services suspended, places of worship closed. But can the government really do that? This is Global Affairs Today. Let's start the conversation. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm your host, Imani Cherry. And today we're talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and the restrictions on our civil rights, especially our right to come together in person in a house of worship, whether it's a church, a mosque, or a shul. Religious freedom is enshrined in international law and in the constitutions of many countries. So how can a government forbid someone from exercising that right? To start off our conversation today, we're talking with a pastor, just one of hundreds of thousands of religious leaders around the world who had to make the hard decision. How would they respond to a state-mandated COVID restriction? I'm happy to be joined today by Mike Spiegel, who is the senior pastor at New Hope Seventh-day Adventist Church in Fulton, Maryland. Welcome, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Imani. Nice to be with you.
So I'm going to start out with this question. When you first, back in April 2020, when you first heard that the state was locking down and restricting your ability to come into church and worship, what was your first reaction?
You know, our first reaction was just the, I think what everybody was experiencing, which is, how long is this going to last? What's the impact going to be? And obviously we're almost like 11 months later now, and we're still not sure when all that will change. So for us, it was just the immediate thing of, all right, what do we do in this moment? And what's the most important thing we can do? And we decided that it was about being good neighbors, that we wanted our members to be safe. We wanted the folks that came and attended our church to be safe. And we wanted them as they left to be safe in our community. So we looked at this not just as we were fearful of getting together, but more as a faith issue, not of our restrictions, but on our, what we're going to do for our community. What was the best thing? What was the way we could bless them?
So how did you guys work with local officials in keeping your members safe and while also being able to conduct church services?
So we're fortunate. We have one of our members is fairly high up in our local county government. And so he's been a great resource for us. We actually put together a team we call the reopening team that still continues to meet because we are not back into being open for actual people in the building. And it's made up of a lot of medical folks, everything from a pulmonary doctor to a lot of nurses to some social workers, just trying to keep everything informed and up to date on what's the best way to do this and when it's going to be the right thing to do this. And so we've been viewing this again, not as a restrictions on our rights, but as an issue of what's the best thing to be doing for those that attend and for our neighbors. What is the best way to be good neighbors through all this?
So you mentioned being good neighbors. Some of us really depend and rely on our church communities to stay connected to our faith. How has New Hope adapted their outreach ministries, their worship services to this new territory that we're in?
Yeah, probably the first thing we did was we already had online services. We've had that for years. We've run two services every weekend that we had both in the building and shared online. So we were probably a step ahead of a lot of churches on being online. But we changed how we did that. We cut back on the amount of music we did. We're trying to get better at our quality, recognizing that people have a lot more choices right now. So we did that for quite a few months as far as gatherings. Then this last fall in October, we did an outdoor service, and we were fortunate because the weather held up around here in Maryland that we were able to go into November. And it was a great reminder just how much people needed to be around other parts of their church. We also were fortunate we had a chance to start a pantry, have our church facility become a pantry for a local organization in the town that we're closest to. And so we're a site for them, for people to come, pick up groceries, go deliver them to people who weren't able to get out or weren't able to have food during this time. And so that's been a great opportunity to meet new people, to again try to be a blessing to those that live around us.
So, Pastor Mike, what have you learned, maybe personally as a senior pastor? You know, this seems like a new territory for everyone. What have you learned in 2020? And, well, the COVID restrictions are happening now, so what have you learned?
You know, I think I've learned that this is an important time of giving others grace, right? Part of the politicization of all of this, part of the frustration, part of the varying views of people about whether this is even a real thing or if it's not that big of a deal. We don't have a lot of folks in that area, but it does pop up. And so we've, you know, for me, it's about, you know, doing something that I've never had to do in all my years of ministry. And that's been a hard thing to kind of work through. So for me personally, it's been just missing the actual contact with people. We're a pretty hugging group, I guess you could say, at our church, that it's very hands-on. And so you see people are used to hugging each other, you know, shaking hands, being connected, being close to people. And not to be able to do that has had an impact. I think all of us, so we have a staff of four of us pastors, and we've talked pretty regularly about this, what we're all experiencing on sort of a subconscious level of the impact of this on our own psyches and just our need for community and our need for finding hope in this moment when there is no really kind of finish line. This isn't like saying, hey, we're going to hold on until June of this year or August of this year. This is holding on until we don't know when. So I think the biggest thing we've learned is just the ability to give grace to some people when there isn't any clear-cut answer to this.
So we have about a minute and 30 seconds left. So I just want to ask this question. What does the future look like for New Hope? What's that first service in person going to look like after this pandemic is over?
Well, that's a good question, because it could look pretty bare. It could look packed, right? We don't know how people are going to respond. The longer this goes, how that impacts people. I know we've done some surveys over the course of this, just seeing how comfortable people are and what they would need to be comfortable back in this space. And most of our, we've had a pretty strong response to people needing a lot of things to safeguard. They're worried not just about their own health, but again, about the people they come in contact with. But we've had during our worship services a minimal crew in there to film it and to pray. We did an interview a couple of weeks ago with one of our members. He has done instead of doing a kids, what we call kids circles, kids Sabbath school on in person, he's been doing it online. And talking to him afterwards, thanking him for not just interviewing with us, but just what he's been doing during this time. And he said he, as soon as he walked in the building, he was in tears, because he said he didn't recognize how much he had missed the place, just being in the space and what the memories it brings back, the impact it's had on his life. And so I imagine a lot of folks, when we finally get back in the building, it's going to be a moving experience because of what we've lost during this time.
Well, Pastor Mike, thank you so much for sharing your church's story about how you've had to adapt during this really difficult time. We really appreciate you being here today.
Thanks, Imani. Great to be with you.
So we're taking a break now, but when we come back, we're diving deeper into this challenging subject of protecting religious freedom in the midst of a crisis. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking today about the challenging topic of when, if ever, a government has the right to prevent people from coming together to worship. And I'm glad to welcome two guests to help us work through these questions. Dr. Knox Thames is a senior fellow at the Institute for Global Engagement, and attorney Alan Reineck is executive director of the Church State Council in California. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Glad to be with you.
Thank you.
So, Alan, let me start with you. Is religious freedom absolute in every situation? Give me your answer.
No right is an absolute. There certainly are those who have reacted to COVID restrictions as though religious freedom isn't absolute, and how dare the state interfere and direct churches on safety measures and impose restrictions. But no, there's always going to be a balance, and the Supreme Court struggles with just how to balance those interests, as here between public health and something so vital as religious freedom.
So why aren't churches and businesses, why weren't they treated the same way when the COVID restrictions happened and when, you know, the lockdown started? What do you think, Knox?
Well, our local officials are having to go through a very difficult situation, an unprecedented situation, grappling with a pandemic that's just now taken the lives of 500,000 Americans and countless thousands more around the world. How do you balance public security, public health, with these constitutional rights of religious freedom? Of course, the government can never touch the ability of Americans to believe in what they want to believe. That soul freedom is absolute, untouchable by the state. But there are permissible limitations that governments can place on how that religious belief is expressed and acted upon. So under certain situations, such as the one with a pandemic, localities can limit public gatherings if it's done in a neutral way and not singling out particular groups in a discriminatory manner.
So Knox, you wrote an article last year for Christianity Today, and you said, "I hope Americans will set the term persecution aside when they talk about the issue of church closures." What did you mean by that?
I was talking specifically about our domestic environment in this COVID reality. I had heard a lot of discussion about these church closures as being persecution, that American Christians were feeling persecuted, were being persecuted because they couldn't gather on Sunday for worship. And this also applied to our Jewish and Muslim brothers and sisters and other faith communities. But I wrote about how, if you look broadly, the United States is an island, an oasis of religious freedom. And we should really reserve the word persecution for brutal instances where people are violently acted against for just wanting to live out their faith. Torture, jailing, murder. I even have on my bookshelf pieces of different places of worship that have been destroyed, one of which I have right here. This is from an Adventist church in the country of Turkmenistan that was bulldozed to the ground because they couldn't get the right permits. These are things, thank God, we never experience here in the United States. So while we need to continue to perfect our religious liberties at home, we need to be mindful of the broader global environment that's incredibly repressive, very violent, and motivated out of an animus towards faith. Whereas here in the United States, you know, in my state of Virginia, we had local officials encouraging people to go to church, but just do it online. So there are some key distinctions with motive and the use of force that really separate what's happening here with many, many places around the world.
So we're talking about different places around the world. I guess you can say it's fair to say that we shouldn't use the word persecution here, but in other places around the world, churches have been closed down for COVID restrictions in places that do not protect these constitutional rights. Alan, what's a better way to frame the conversation around this in countries that do have religious freedom rights versus countries that don't?
Well, first of all, Imani, I want to go back to the way you framed your question about churches being treated unequally with businesses, because first of all, there's been wide disparity of treatment from state to state across the United States. Government officials are trying to figure out how to deal with the pandemic, and there's great disagreement about, you know, exactly who do you treat churches the same as? Is it movie theaters and other places where people are sitting together in close proximity for an extended period of time? That's generally the way many states have taken it. Or the Supreme Court has essentially said, well, if churches are treated worse than virtually any other business establishment, that's a problem. So, you know, treated fairly with whom? I think if we dig a little deeper, though, part of the problem is the kind of suspicion we have of government, that there's this innate hostility between some segments of the faith community and government. And I think that's a mistake. I've been advocating from the very beginning that clergy build good working relationships with local health officials, local government officials, because we're all in this together. And the role of the church is not to fight with our government, it's to serve our community.
So when it comes to religious freedom issues, I hear over and over again that, you know, this country's protecting those rights. But what about those countries that don't protect those rights? Knox, we have a few seconds before we close out this segment, but can you tell me a little bit about how those countries have responded to COVID-19?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, there's a troubling trend to scapegoat religious minorities, to blame them for the problems that are really about failure of the government or the regime, the authoritarian rulers, to protect their people from the pandemic. They'll say, it's not about us, it's about this minority, and let's just pile on them, let's take away their land, let's close their places of worship. Things like this are happening in Iran towards the Baha'i community, in India towards the Muslim community. So it's an opportunity for bad governments to do bad things against the most vulnerable religious minorities in their communities. We're seeing that time and time again.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Stay tuned. Welcome back to our discussion today about religious freedom in the COVID-19 pandemic. So, Knox, I'm going to start with you. What would you say to someone who has very strong feelings about this topic and realizes that their right to exercise their religion is not absolute in every situation?
It's a challenging idea, but it's one that is grounded in international law and American law. Of course, your soul freedom is untouchable by the state, but there are circumstances when local governments, national governments can limit certain expressions of that faith, like during a pandemic when it's unwise to have people congregate in large numbers. I think part of the problem is we've been so blessed in the United States to have almost unlimited religious freedom. We're an island unlike any other place in the world. We're spoiled. And so it's jarring when suddenly we can't go to church, we can't see our friends and neighbors and hug them and worship together. I mean, my family, we've been to church, I think, twice in the last year. We go regularly on Sundays through Zoom. It helps, but it's not the same thing. Our children are doing youth group again through Zoom. It's okay, but it's not the same thing. We should all keep in mind that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, that these limitations are not forever. They're not motivated out of any animus towards religious freedom. It's motivated out of the public good, keeping everyone safe and healthy. And hopefully when the weather improves and the vaccinations get out, we can start returning back to normal. We're already seeing that with some churches, getting together in small numbers. So we should stay focused and not relax too much, but push ahead to hopefully the summer and certainly the fall when we can be gathering together in large numbers to worship at church.
Let's take a look at this quick clip.
So why are you breaking the snap lockdown to open this morning?
Well, look, my conviction is always the Word of God. And I believe there comes a time when we do need to draw a line in the sand. We need to make a choice. Are we going to please God or are we going to please man? And today I'm making that choice.
The church can't be shut down, you know, because there's so many sick, hurting people out there. Church needs to be open for them. So I'm here. I want to pray for people, you know, that come and help them through all what they're going through.
So the last lady in that clip said, in so many words, sick and hurting people are out there. We need to open church to pray for them. Alan, what do you say to someone who feels like it's their duty to go to church and pray for sick, hurting people out there during this pandemic?
I get that there are a lot of people who are sick and hurting, and that there's a great need for the fellowship and the community of church. But we're living in a pandemic. People are dying, and some of them are dying because they go to church. But the reality is that the second great commandment of the law is to love your neighbor as yourself. And how do we love our neighbor as ourselves if we're going to expose them to risk of serious disease or death? It really doesn't make any sense. And for people then to ignore common health procedures of masking and social distancing in order to worship together and think that God is going to keep them safe, that's just not biblical.
So does this issue transcend human-made law? Knox, what do you think?
Look, everyone can worship wherever they are. It's the ability for individuals to pray, to seek the divine as their conscience leads, is something that can be done anywhere. Yes, this is a unique moment where we're experiencing limitations on our ability to congregate. But that doesn't mean our religious freedoms have been limited or curtailed permanently. We have to keep in mind the moment that we're in world history. There's a pandemic. It's taken 500,000 American lives, countless thousands more around the globe. And we need to do whatever we can to get through this moment and be of service to our communities. I appreciate what Alan was saying, that we need to be of service, and we best serve by taking the necessary precautions to wear masks, to have social distancing until such time that the curve has been bent and we can reconvene again.
Knox, I want to follow up with that question. What is the difference between an unjustified reason and a justified reason to interfere with someone's religious liberty?
Now, my work is mostly or almost exclusively in the international level. And a lot of times you'll see governments say, well, we need to prevent people from worshiping together or gathering. We have to stop people from changing faith, converting for national security. It would create great instability. Well, that's actually not a permissible reason under international law to limit activities. It has to be things that are for the common good, that are equally applied across all communities. You can't be singling groups out for special negative treatment. And that's something we see everywhere. This issue I mentioned in the first segment about scapegoating. We see time and time again, repressive regimes singling out religious minorities and saying they're the reason we are having this pandemic, when it's absolutely false. And it's actually because the government itself has failed, but they're looking for scapegoats. So we have to be mindful of the environment. We should be appreciative of Americans, of the great religious liberties we enjoy. And frankly, when we experience these limitations, let's turn that to praying for truly persecuted people in other parts of the world, in China, in Pakistan, in Iran, in Saudi Arabia, use it to give ourselves a broader understanding of the challenges facing Christians and so many others around the world for just wanting to live out their faith peacefully.
So we need to wrap things up, but before we go, we like to leave our viewers with a quick takeaway from today's discussion. So Alan, I'll start with you. What is the key consideration or value that drives your response to the current COVID-19 restrictions on your religious freedom?
You know, Imani, my day job, I file religious discrimination cases in court, and sometimes we file them against government entities. But rarely have I brought lawsuits on behalf of a church against a government entity, because the role of the church is to serve the community, not to fight with it. And so I'm keenly aware that this whole debate and conflict over religious liberty and the COVID restrictions has generated so much conflict that's unnecessary, and that our first impulse should be to work together with government to preserve public health. I mean, Jesus said, "I come that you might have life and have life more abundantly." So that's what we should be doing, the work of Jesus in fostering the abundant life, not engaging in activities that are going to result in harm to people. So I think that this whole hostility between church, the suspicion of churches towards government, is misplaced, and that we've missed, in many places, missed opportunities to develop better working relationships with local government to solve a common problem.
And what's your takeaway, Knox?
We need to take going back to church as a very serious decision, because it doesn't just impact our own family, but also our community. you know, we need to be good neighbors. We need to be mindful of the health, the actual physical health of the towns and cities that we live in. So going back to church, as much as we all want to do it as soon as we can, is something that's actually bigger than an individual decision. And I also want to go back to the point about, while this is a challenging time for people of all faith in the United States who want to meet weekly for collective worship, it's not persecution. We should be mindful that there are millions and millions of people that daily must confront the threat of actual violence against themselves for the mere act of wanting to express their faith peacefully. That's persecution. And thank God we're not experiencing it here in the United States. So when we are dealing with these challenges, let's have that broader global mindset and think about our brothers and sisters and the people of other faith and no faith who are being persecuted for what they believe in other countries. And let's think about ways we can try to help them and get the United States to play a leading role in advocating for their religious freedom.
Alan Knox, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's been a great conversation. Thanks for joining us, and as always, we want to hear from you. You can connect with us anytime. Go to hopetv.org or talk to us on Twitter at GlobalToday7. And until next time, we hope you'll keep the conversation going. Goodbye now.